We've produced a new CD of two sermons preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin, one for Lent and one for Easter. And we'll send you this new CD for any size donation during the season of Lent. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. And for any size gift between now and April 12th, we'll send you a CD of one of Todd's Lent and Easter sermons.
Unfortunately, Chinese government is carried easiest sort of method, suppression, killing, torture, arrest.
Some have called this cultural genocide.
Yes.
That's the Dalai Lama with Ann Curry in a recent MSNBC interview talking about how China has cracked down on Buddhism, Tibetan Buddhism in particular. Torture, killing, arrest, suppression are the terms that the Dalai Lama uses. Who is the Dalai Lama? What is Buddhism, and why does China continue to not only keep this man, the leader of all these Buddhists, out of his native country, but continue to suppress the religious rights of Buddhists and others as well? Gretchen Passantino joins us for the remainder of this hour of Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Gretchen is a regular guest, co-founder of Answers in Action, based in Costa Mesa, California. Gretchen, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Well, thank you so much, Todd. It's always a pleasure.
Yesterday was the 50th anniversary of Tibetan Buddhism's expulsion from Tibet, and you got to wonder, as much as we disagree with a man like the Dalai Lama and his many followers in theological matters, can we stand with him when it comes to the issue of religious freedom and religious oppression?
Well, certainly there are things that we have in common with all kinds of people in the world, religious and non-religious. We might agree with Mormons on pro-life issues. We might agree with Catholics on traditional marriage. We might agree with the Buddhists on religious freedom. As long as we understand that the things we're agreeing with are all things given to us by God, as he created us, and in the with the purposes for which he created us, that it's not that we're a little bit Buddhist or a little bit Mormon or a little bit Hindu or something like that, or that it doesn't really matter what you believe. What we have in common, when its origin is in God and in God's standards, God's morality, and God's revelation, we certainly ought to use not just as a point of agreement, but as a point of contact for sharing the good news of the gospel with others.
Who is the Dalai Lama to his Buddhist followers?
To his Buddhist followers, he is a Buddha. That is, he is someone who has reached the state of complete enlightenment and disengagement from the world, a complete realization that he is part of the ultimate, eternal, unlimited mind that is the only thing in all of reality that actually exists. And while he has achieved that state in his own life, he has retarded his expression of that state so that he can communicate with lesser beings like his followers and other human beings in the earth, so that we too can learn what reality truly is and make our way toward experiencing that reality as he's experienced it.
Well, he seems to do a very good job of it. I mean, from what I've seen, and he is a bit of a rock star, you know, Nobel Peace Prize winner, and among other things. But in his public persona, he seems to be just a delightful person. And it seems to be very affable, very friendly with the West, or the West friendly with him.
I think part of that is an antinomy in Buddhism that's very curious. On the one hand, Buddhists are taught to be critical of everything, to take nothing for granted, and to recognize no human above any other human. On the other hand, they're taught to learn from the masters, to respect those who are more spiritually mature than they are, and to see the Buddha wherever the Buddha manifests, and to be in awe and prostrate in worship, even though worship, in the sense that we would think of as Christians, is actually unheard of in Buddhism. Buddhism is a religion of experience and realization, not a religion of obedience and worship.
Is the Dalai Lama worshipped by Buddhists?
only in the sense that they believe that he is a manifestation of the true reality, which to them is the divine, and the rest of the world is not. But they don't understand the world and creation and God the way we do as Christians. We believe that God alone is the personal one who is eternal, omnipotent, omniscient, all good, all just, all loving. We could go through a lot of different attributes. That he created everything out of nothing, that we do not participate in God's essential being, but we are instead dependent creatures created and sustained by him. In Buddhism, the only reality that exists is God, this infinite, they call it a mind, but in essence, it isn't even really personal. The ultimate goal in Buddhism is to cease to exist as anything differentiated from the eternal mind. But you and I think of mind as an ego, as someone saying, I am and you are and he is. And in Buddhism, that's not what they mean by the eternal mind. They mean that there is some sort of a consciousness or sentientness that is eternal and ineffable or unable to be understood. And we who think that we are individuals, who think that we were born at a certain time and will die at a certain time, who think that we're distinguished from other persons and other things, we're actually erroneous in our thinking. When we lose that illusion and, in essence, actually lose all of ourselves, lose our identity, then we become fulfilled in the Buddhist theology. So they don't see God as the creator. They see God as the only thing that exists, and they see themselves and their own thoughts about God and about worship and about sin and salvation and everything else is actually errors in this eternal isness. I know it sounds confusing, but that's as clear as it can be. It's not a clear religion.
All right. Also not particularly logical. I want to come back to that in a few minutes, but then they would say, so what? Big deal. It's not logical. That's a Western construct. What is man's basic predicament according to Buddhism?
Well, in Buddhism, predicaments don't actually exist. Sin doesn't actually exist. Disease, death, even any distinction between divine and not divine doesn't really exist. The only error is the error of thinking there's error. In Buddhism, you're not saved, you realize. In Buddhism, you don't rise from pitiful humanness to divine redemption, you realize that you've been God all along. And when you fully realize it, you cease to be an I realizing anything. You just experience Buddhahood.
So let's see, again, running up against some logic here. If there is no predicament, the real problem that Buddhism is attempting to address?
You think there's a problem.
Okay. So the difference between me and the Dalai Lama, what's the difference according to the Buddhist?
Ultimately, there's no difference, but you don't know that. The way you achieve that knowledge is to practice the specific tenets of Buddhism and yield and surrender yourself to nothingness, to vacuousness, to eternal ising, to leave behind any yearning or any need or any desire, and to, in essence, obliterate your own existence. They do this through a number of their customary teachings, like, you know, the Middle Way and the Four Noble Truths and things like that. But ultimately, it comes down to the more you think you are, the less you are. And the less you think you are, the more you are. I know it doesn't make sense, but that's Buddhism.
So it operates essentially, at least from our perspective, in the context of a paradox. We would think
yes,
of it as a
definitely.
Paradox, but they would say, no, there is no paradox. There just is.
That's correct. In fact, the Four Noble Truths build on that. The first noble truth is that there is suffering. The second noble truth is that realization arises from suffering. The third noble truth is that the end of suffering is possible. And the fourth noble truth, the biggest one, the one that incorporates what's called the Noble Eightfold Path, is that the path to end suffering is ultimately to realize that it doesn't exist.
All right, let's stop.
And in that very realization, you cease to have any self-identity.
Let's stop right there. We'll come back to that. Review the four noble truths, and then in the last one, the Eightfold Path, a lot of right thinking, right acting, right decisions, things like that in Buddhism. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. live on this Wednesday afternoon, the 11th of March. What kind of questions, what kind of comments do you have about the Dalai Lama and Buddhism? Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE, and our in-studio email address is talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. Gretchen Pasentino is our guest for the next half hour. She's co-founder of Answers in Action, based in Costa Mesa, California. We were talking with someone recently on the program the subject was, if I remember correctly, someone who is a Christian Buddhist. They believe themselves to be both a Christian and a Buddhist. Now, I'm trying to figure out if that's even possible. It doesn't seem possible. One religion says you have no problem. You need not be saved. There is no sin. There is no suffering. That would rule out the cross pretty quickly, wouldn't it? No sin, no suffering. Jesus is wasting his time, if Jesus exists at all, on the cross, right? So the two seem fundamentally incompatible. But when we come back, we'll go into the details of Buddhism. I understand from the news accounts that the Dalai Lama was chosen or revealed to be the Dalai Lama at age 4. Had he already achieved full realization or non-realization by that time? We'll answer that question on the other side of the break. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc.
The sharpest arrow in your apologetics quiver. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Rampant violence. What's the problem?
Answers with Ken Ham, author of the powerful book on effective evangelism called Why Won't They Listen?
Well, what's the cause of growing school violence? Well, ultimately, sin is the cause, of course. However, there are many complex issues associated with violence, but I'd like to suggest there's an underlying education problem involved nonetheless. You see, generations ago, young people in our schools were taught that there's a God who created all things. They understood that God was the absolute authority, and thus he sets rules of right and wrong, and this provided a basis for purpose and meaning in life. But the secular education systems have all but banned God from the classroom. In America, prayer and Bible readings are no longer part of the curriculum, and Darwinian evolution is taught as fact. The students believe there's no God, they're just animals. The more students believe there's no God and they're just animals, well, the more their thinking will be permeated with the idea there's no purpose and meaning in life, and thus humans have no real value. You know, this is the underlying influence on the culture that's greatly contributed to why violence, including in schools, is on the rise.
What about the other social issues of our day, like abortion, cloning, racism, and so on? What does the Bible teach? Ken Ham tackles these topics in a book he's co-authored entitled War of the Worldviews. For your gift of any amount today, we'll send it in the mail to you. Call our toll-free line at 1-888-89-ANSWERS. 888-89-ANSWERS.
So what's the fad du jour at your church? Beth Moore, Rick Warren, post-emergent, pre-emergent, or some other move of the spirit that hasn't quite hit you yet? At the Brothers of John the Steadfast, we're kicking it old school. And by old school, I mean the 1580 Book of Concord. Check out our website for a list of confessional study groups, or if you have one at your congregation, you can let us know. www.steadfastlutherans.com.
Hello, Dolly. This is Louis. Dolly, it's so nice to have you back where you belong.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin, talking about Buddhism and the Dalai Lama. Gretchen Pasentino is our guest. Gretchen, recently we were talking about the new bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of Northern Michigan. He claimed to be a practicing Christian and a practicing Buddhist at the same time. Everything you said so far would seem to indicate that that is a contradiction in terms. Your thoughts?
It is a contradiction in terms. In fact, any of the great monotheistic religions growing out of God's original revelation through Abraham and Moses to the world will completely repudiate any sort of Buddhistic idea. I remember one time years ago, my late husband Bob and I were doing a radio show with some other religious spokespeople, and there was a rabbi who was on the show. And I know it sounds like I'm going to tell a joke. It's not a joke, but the rabbi and the Protestants were asked by the host, what do you think about life after death? And actually, there was a priest, too. Now, it really sounds like a joke. But anyway, the priest gave his idea. Bob and I gave our ideas. The rabbi said, you know, I've got enough problem with this life without having to worry about another life. And he said, as far as my worldview, well, I don't like to be pinned down to anything. But I guess if I really had to say anything, I guess I'd say I was a Buddhist. Now, this was a rabbi, a Jewish rabbi, telling us that if he identified with anything, it would be Buddhism. And you're talking about an Episcopal bishop who says, well, yeah, I'm a Buddhist and a Christian. The reason people think that they can combine Buddhism with something else is because Buddhism is in some ways not even religious. In fact, in some ways, Buddhism is almost atheistic because Buddhism says that there is only one substance of reality. There is no distinction at all in reality. So everything is nothing and nothing is everything, so I guess Christianity can be Buddhism and Buddhism can be Christianity. But by contrast, Christianity, which is the true fulfillment of God's original revelation, says that there is distinction. There is one who is God over all, the eternal one, the great I am, the infinite, eternal, all good, all just, all powerful God, who created everything else, created it good, but at least as far as humans are concerned, with free will and the potential to choose bad instead of good, and that the world that we experience today is created and sustained by that one God and marred and faced for destruction by our free will sinning that separated us from God's eternal plan. And that plan will be fulfilled, but only by redemption in Jesus Christ. That is a very distinct, very absolute apprehension of reality that Buddhism and no other religion can actually deal with. Buddhism is actually nothing. Christianity is actually everything.
Okay, before you talked about the four noble truths, there is suffering. Realization comes through suffering. Suffering can end. And then the fourth would be incorporated into what is called the Eightfold Path. What is that for the Buddhist?
What is what?
The Eightfold Path.
Okay, the Eightfold Path. If you remember the word right with the Eightfold Path, that will help you to understand it. If you are doing the right things in the right way, you will ultimately realize that you don't really exist at all. There's only one essence of existence, and that essence of existence is all that there is. So the word right helps you to understand that. The Noble Eightfold Path starts with right viewing or right apprehension, the way you look at the world. The second is the right intention. Do you intend to do the right thing? The third is, and that includes, you know, ethics and morality. The third is right speaking. You speak truthfully and not untruthfully. You speak constructively and not destructively. The fourth is right acting. You do not act in a harmful way. Of course, you know, we could debate forever what's harmful and not harmful. Number five is right profession or career or livelihood, right living. The sixth is right effort. You are intending and making the effort, expending the energy to be a better person and not a worse person. Number seven is right indifference. You don't yearn or long or crave anything. You don't abhor or shrink away from anything. You just live indifferently. So right acting of indifference. or right state of indifference. And then number eight is right meditation or concentration or contemplation. Ultimately, that comes to the right realization that all of reality is only one sentient thing of which you are merely a part and an undifferentiated part, so you better stop thinking so that you can express or manifest your genuine unity with the one existence.
So the goal of Buddhism, ultimately, if we can speak even of that, is to figuratively fade into the wallpaper of the universe, whatever the universe may be, the one thing that is.
Yes. Buddhism does not offer redemption. It offers extinction.
And they call this enlightenment.
Well, it's meant to be enlightenment, and if it were the case that the only thing in all of reality was just this divine consciousness, then I guess it would be good for everybody to get back to that. But not only is that not the truth, but it is in and of itself self-contradictory. If all of reality is only one undifferentiated consciousness, then how do you account for even the idea of other consciousness? How does the Dalai Lama have a conversation with the President of the United States? How does he criticize the government of Communist China? How does he seek to explain his divine realizations to his followers? Every step of the way, Buddhism is self-contradictory. Christianity, on the other hand, is not only self-contradictory, not only rational, not only corresponds exactly to history and observable, testable reality, but with the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ, Christianity alone solves the problem of the very evident and very real fact of evil, sin, sickness, death, and destruction. Only in Christianity is redemption promised and coming from the infinite, eternal, all-powerful God through Jesus Christ.
Let's talk a little bit more about the Dalai Lama. I saw, according to the news accounts, that he was merely four when he was recognized to be who he is. They said on the news, an incarnation of the Buddha. I take that to be somewhat inaccurate, since incarnation would imply something akin to Christianity. Talk about the Dalai Lama as a religious figure throughout his life.
Well, the Dalai Lama was born in Nepal, which is a northern region of what today is India, and he was raised in a Hindu and Buddhistic atmosphere or culture in that area, that part of India. And very, very early, there were things associated with his life that those around him took to be signs that he was the new manifestation of the Buddha. They associated unusual circumstances and declared them to be miracles, miracles of healing, miracles that you and I would think maybe were kind of trivial, like turning an inanimate thing into something living or turning something solid into something liquid or vice versa. Once it was decided by the spiritual leaders of the day that he was the current manifestation of the Buddha, then everything in his entire life was tailored around that assumption. The way he was treated, the way he was listened to, the things he was encouraged to do and enabled to do, and the things that he refrained from doing or was restricted from doing, everything was meant to show the Buddhist world around him that he was the current manifestation of God or of the Buddha.
So it's kind of a little bit of self-fulfilling prophecy. I mean, he's groomed to this position.
Yes, and of course, if we remember that in Buddhist philosophy, ultimately, error, sin, death, disease, and destruction don't even exist, then all the things that are other than that, you can attribute to him and say, see, we told you it was the Buddha, and all of those things, well, they don't really exist anyway, so they don't count.
What type of authority is vested in the Dalai Lama among Buddhists? We've got about a minute before we take another break.
That's kind of ambivalent, too, because in Buddhism, there is no authority. No one is higher than anyone else. Everyone is merely a kind of a mirage of this one consciousness. but also they have a great respect and esteem that they give to the Dalai Lama because he expresses the Buddha most perfectly. So he is definitely honored, revealed, listened to, and copied, but he is not like a god or a cult leader or something like that.
Gretchen Pasentino is our guest, co-founder of Answers in Action, based in Costa Mesa, California. We're talking about Buddhism and the Dalai Lama. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about China, why it is they continue to restrict and, in fact, enact laws against the religious rights of Buddhists and others. And I'm wondering about the Dalai Lama. He's in his mid-70s now, in remarkable shape, by the way, for his mid-70s, and yet sooner or later he will have to be replaced. Is there someone waiting in the wings, the new Dalai Lama? Our call-in number on this Wednesday afternoon, the 11th of March, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-I-E. Email us here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org.
Noted author and history professor Dr. Paul Meyer on the uniqueness of Issues Etc.
I'm delighted not only to listen to Issues Etc., but also to have the privilege of being on the program from time to time. Issues is never afraid to take a stand on the thorny, vexing issues that clutter our daily horizons. And it does so in the name of a solidly based Christianity that doesn't flirt with fads or fantasies. Whereas some Christian programs sidestep ethical and doctrinal questions in our day, Issues takes them head-on in a fearless, responsible, thoughtful manner. Both head and heart are involved when Issues applies Holy Scripture.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a tax-deductible gift today. Donate online at issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support.
No ditto heads allowed. You're listening to Issues Etc.
A life-saving campaign is launched.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
The Knights of Columbus, the largest lay Catholic organization in the world, started a program to help pregnancy resource centers obtain ultrasound machines. On January 23, 2009, the 36th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, the organization launched its campaign by donating over $80,000 to pregnancy resource centers in Iowa City, Iowa, and Jacksonville, Florida. Now, 4D ultrasound machines will provide expectant mothers clear, vibrant pictures of their unborn child. Let's applaud the Knights of Columbus for this life-saving effort.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List, inviting you to join us in our battle for life. For more, go online to sba-list.org.
It's a karma's gonna get you. Gonna look you right in the face.
Better get yourself together, darling.
Join the human race.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. 10 minutes left for your questions or comments on the Dalai Lama and Buddhism. Talk back at issuesetc.org or 1-877-623-6943. I'm wondering, before there was the present Dalai Lama, was there one before him? Is this kind of a perennial thing in Buddhism, or is this only occasionally in human history, in the Buddhist perspective, that this manifestation of the Buddha appears among us?
In traditional Tibetan Buddhism, there has always been a Dalai Lama, and there always will be a Dalai Lama, not necessarily the same person by the same name, but a current manifestation of the Buddha in what we would call human form. That is the traditional view. There are certainly times in the history of Tibetan Buddhism when there either has not been a particular individual fairly generally acclaimed as the Buddha, or times when there have been rivals, each claiming to be the Buddha. There certainly will be a successor to the current Dalai Lama. There was a young man just a few years ago who gained some notoriety as being the successor, somebody, a teenager who had escaped from Tibet. He didn't handle his newfound fame very well, and he's retreated into obscurity now in northern India. Whether he's going to reappear at some point, we really don't know, and I think it will be when this Dalai Lama dies that we'll see what's going to happen. But the traditional view is that there is always a manifestation of the Buddha who is revealing the divinity of reality to the world all the time.
So is there somebody waiting in the wings?
I'm certain that there's more than one somebody. I'm not sure who will come out on top.
We were not privy to kind of the wranglings that brought the present Dalai Lama to the fore, but I imagine they're, especially given the climate in Tibetan Buddhism vis-a-vis China, there has to be an awful lot of concern, not only from Buddhists, but also from the Chinese, about another Dalai Lama. He's been a real thorn in their side.
Well, this individual has proven to be more powerful politically and socially than any other Buddhist leader certainly in what we'd call modern history, the last 500 or 600 years. It has become a position that has quite a bit more power and authority than we would have thought even 40 years ago. Whether some successor is able to maintain or even build on that notoriety and that power, I really don't know. I think we'll have to wait and see. But I think it's very interesting that the Chinese Communist government is less concerned with the religious aspects of Buddhism. And remember, I said before that in some senses, Buddhism is not even religious. But they're less concerned with the religious aspects of Buddhism, its particular tenets and teachings and practices, than they are with the ability of one individual or a small group of individuals to gain political and social power so that they can provoke or control people's actions in a social way. That's the same threat they see from Christianity. When I was blessed to go to China 2 years ago and spend time with Christian brothers and sisters in mainland China, we were only in cities. I didn't get out into any of the rural areas. But we found that in many of the cities, we could be in the middle of a restaurant and have 20 of us at a table joining hands and praying out loud in the middle of Beijing, for example, or in a hotel conference room teaching the Word of God to 200 or 300 young Christian Chinese people. And that wasn't a problem for the government. But if we were to go behind closed doors and speak secretly, or if we were to encourage some sort of social action that was not directed or sponsored or approved by the government, that's what the government feared. It was very curious to me that the Chinese government is more concerned with threats to their power than they are with the reality or unreality of spiritual truth.
The current Dalai Lama has advocated a passive resistance. In essence, nonviolent resistance, especially of his followers in China. How big of a problem has that presented for the Chinese Communist government?
Well, when anyone presumes to speak in the name of the government, whether they're saying be peaceful or be violent, they're still placing themselves between the people and the government. And that threatens the government. Only the government should say be peaceful or be violent. When we were in China and having great fellowship with many Chinese Christians, they told us stories about how if they were to go to the government and say, we're this church group and we would like to help with your feeding of the poor in this slum area, the government would fall all over themselves to have this church group help them. But if they were just to go into that slum area and start feeding people on their own, they'd get on all kinds of trouble. Doing exactly the same thing, but in the first case, acknowledging the power and the authority of the government. In the second case, presuming that they could do something like this on their own. The Chinese government is, to me, the very epitome of an idolatrous religion of biblical times, or an idolatry practicing old king of Israel. Power is what they want, and power is what threatens them. They have little thought for the truth of God and his revelation and his redemption. It's all about power to them. That's very, very sad, because the Chinese government is missing out on what's most important. It's not power, it's redemption.
Is Buddhism in the West, particularly in the United States, as it's practiced kind of popularly by the few that do, the same thing as the kind of Buddhism you might find practiced by men like the Dalai Lama and his followers?
I can't speak on an individual basis, but I would say that Buddhism in areas where people are struggling and starving and suffering is, in my opinion, more pure to the traditional teachings like the Eightfold Path, because the people are learning to be content with the state that they find themselves in. Buddhism in the West, however, in lands where people have great abundance, and believe me, even in our economic chaos that we have right now, we still have great affluence in this country. People who practice Buddhism in the midst of affluence see it only as another tool to augment their pleasure. And that certainly goes against the basic Buddhist ideal, which is the renunciation of all things material and non-divine.
Then, only with 1 minute left, Gretchen, what's the major difference between Buddhism and Christianity?
The major difference between Buddhism and Christianity is Jesus Christ, our Savior and our Redeemer. We are sinners, lost in our sickness, our disease, our rebelliousness against the God who created us and desires nothing more from us than complete fulfillment in serving and worshiping him. That's only possible when we're redeemed from our sinfulness and our error and our destruction and our death by trusting in Jesus Christ who died on the cross for us. We don't have to realize anything. We don't have to practice anything. We don't have to meditate anything or choose anything right. We just have to give up. Just surrender and let the cross of Christ cover our sins and redeem us to the God who created us. That's true salvation.
Gretchen Pasentino is co-founder of Answers in Action, based in Costa Mesa, California. Check out the website for Answers in Action tonight. Just go to ours first, issuesetc.org, and click on demand. You'll find a link to Answers in Action. Gretchen, thanks.
Thank you, and God bless you.
Folks, help us defend the faith and teach the truth, the charter of Issues Etc., by making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. You can donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. The address again, LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Or you can donate online, our website, issuesetc.org. Thanks for your support. The difference is Christ himself. The Buddhist will forever strive to rid himself of himself, to enter into that state of enlightened selflessness where he is finally joined, or finally sees himself joined, to the one thing that is or isn't, as the case may be. Constant striving, work, trying to get it right in the mind, trying to think correctly, act correctly, decide correctly, be motivated correctly. Sad to say, it sounds strangely like a lot of what a lot of Christians think that they're all about, but that's not what Christianity is about at all. All the right doing, all the right thinking, all the right motivating has been done. The enlightenment that so many strive for, found only in the perfect life of Jesus Christ, a life lived for us in its entirety, a life and a death and a resurrection that covers us over, makes us right with God, grants us forgiveness, life, and salvation. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.